This is a segment from The Annex, an academic sociology-themed podcast. For more, visit us on the web at theannexpodcast.com. All right, thank you for joining us, Philip.
Thank you for having me.
Before we begin, I just want to announce this is episode 12. And guys, when we started the podcast, that was our initial commitment, was to see it through 12 episodes. So we made it. Congratulations.
Yay.
And I wish you luck in finding my replacement.
All right. Anybody got some banter?
So much of the same. I'm going to make this short and sweet. I'm just going to say, I told you so.
About the backlash?
On what subject?
Do you not recall last week when we were talking about Roy Moore and someone said, oh, this will be old news. He'll be out by next week. And I said, no way. And, you know, who's Cassandra now? You know, Cassandra mythology. You know.
Well, I've never known him to quit anything without an explicit court order and U.S. Marshals showing up to escort him out of the building. So I wouldn't have predicted he'd be out. So I'm not sure who made that prediction.
I'm just saying, go back and listen to the podcast from last week. Everyone out there listening to this podcast, that's an invitation to go back and actually listen to all of my previous predictions.
There you go.
I think that was my only one, but, you know.
Clairvoyant. Got any more takes on what's happened since then?
Yeah, enlighten us with your prophecies that are infallible. Well, what stock should we buy?
Well, hey, pick a stock, any stock. Wall Street seems like it doesn't know what's going on Main Street. So I don't know who's buying all that stock. It's certainly not me. If you recall last week, I said that what I was worried about was backlash, and you know, I made reference to Ford's book, The Race Card, and how he basically said what happens is that, you know, number one, people piggyback on legitimate claims of racial bias, right, and that are often either not true or not serious. And then people who don't want to believe that racial bias is a thing point to those incidents and say, you see, it's not a thing, right? And then backlash ensues. And I'm, you know, while I think that, you know, the floodgates being open and women and men finally coming out and reporting these horrible incidents, it's not good that it happened, but it's good that it's not being buried anymore. I think what's going to happen is you're going to have some individuals creeping in there with the kinds of stories that people who don't want to believe this is real or who know it's very real but want it to go away. I think that they're just going to latch onto those, and things are going to get really ugly.
So what do you mean specifically? Do you mean like somebody makes a serious allegation, but it's not shown to be credible? Or do you mean that somebody makes an accusation that it seems very ambiguous or petty or something like that, but it's like, and there's a backlash to, you know, something that seems very subtle and like, well, that's not that big a deal.
I think both. I definitely think both. I think, you know, men and women who feel belittled by certain kinds of behaviors, I think they have a right to complain, but I don't think, they're in the same category as someone who's been sexually assaulted. And,
yeah, of course.
And some of the things that I've been seeing on Me Too, I kind of feel as though there are individuals who think that those small incidents, although small incidents like that, you know, especially if you experience them daily, I'm sure can feel like they're that huge. I'm just afraid that, you know, if everything is sexual harassment, then no one believes that sexual harassment exists. You understand what I'm saying?
Oh yeah, exactly. And I just like earlier today, I was seeing somebody pointing out that there's something weird about the shitty men in media list, and that it includes like bona fide serial rapists like Harvey Weinstein, but also there's some people where they're included on the list because he yelled at an intern, you know, which should be nice to your interns and give them constructive criticism, but that doesn't mean you belong on the same list as a serial rapist.
I think it's interesting that that we have two different kind of institutional things happening at once with this, where one is the media, like the really well-sourced stuff on Moore or Weinstein from the Washington Post or the New York Times. But they're really driving towards
Philip,
they want to expose.
It's pronounced the Amazon Washington Post.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. Amazon Washington Post. They want to publicize like they're and they build these cases with it. And on the other hand, we have these big institutional things like Title IX offices on campuses where their whole mission is, some of them really, of course, want to respond responsibly, but really institutionally, they're kind of about burying cases. And there's a kind of the conflict of, what's the right way to bring these things out? I agree with Leslie on the risk here. But that's probably not new.
No, definitely not at all. You know, what does encourage me though, is it could have gone in different ways. There could have been a backlash against outing sexual predators, but it seems like in the highly partisan environment, the response was to find Democratic sexual predators. And now there's like this partisan rush to uncover sexual predators, which is fantastic because it basically means, people have gotten much more vigilant about it. There's like a lot more energy that's being dedicated to outing people.
Well, it's like James Madison said about the separation of powers in the Constitution. You set ambition against ambition. The best way, the overall, the I want to screw you by accusing your guys is overwhelming the I want to protect my guys from being accused. You do have some, extremely unprincipled Republicans, an emphasis on some, saying like, maybe Moore is a pederast, maybe he isn't, but, the important thing is that we don't have a liberal Alabama junior senator for a whopping 2 years. And then you have others saying like, Moore's a pederast, but, Franken groped somebody through Kevlar armor and, had a rather sketchy excuse about we need to kiss as a rehearsal.
Well, so I have a question for all three of you. Once again, I'm the one woman here. I know how I feel about all of this coming out, as a woman, I would say like by more than anything else, in some ways I'm heartened, because I've known that this has been going on for almost my entire life. And in some ways it's really great to not that it's happening still, but that it's happening or it's happened, but now people are talking about it, right? And women don't, and the men who are also the victims of harassment and assault and misconduct don't seem ashamed anymore to say, hey, this is what happened. And also, I have three girls. Part of me wants to think, oh wow, this might be a shift that will be really, really good for them. But totally. As men, how are you feeling about this?
I really see it through the prism of being a father of girls for the most part. It's like something that I'm glad. And the other thing is it's something that I never wanted in my own workplace. Like I like people in my own business to be professional. I think people should be professional at work. So. I kind of like the change.
Yeah,
I have I have some inclination to, announce that I'm not a sexual harasser and to get myself, taken out of the category.
You heard it here first.
Breaking news.
Yeah,
right. But one of the things that gets me is the ubiquity of this is just making me think about and. Think poorly about all the men who are doing this, who I'm, probably friends with, and I don't know that they do this kind of stuff. So that's just kind of depressing. It's not upsetting or traumatizing in the way that being the victim of harassment or assault could be. But I feel kind of like my professional environment is just is more, I like it's contaminated in a way that I hadn't really thought about it that much. So that's just my naivete.
I know that there's like some nasty surprises, but if I take the universe of men who I work with, I don't know anybody to be a predator or even close. But I mean, maybe it's a guide to nothing, though. Maybe you don't know what other people are like behind closed doors. Or
well, that's the great defense. I mean, the one thing they can always say, the guy who everybody assumes is not that guy, can always say to his victim, nobody will believe you because I'm not that guy.
But what's funny about this is how many of these things were expected. So, like, you know, very few of these seem like, oh, I would never have believed that about this person, right? For the most part, you hear that and you're like, yeah, that makes sense. You know, I kind of figured that. You know, so like Harvey Weinstein, you know, people didn't necessarily, nobody knew that he was a serial rapist, but everybody kind of knew that he was a colossal asshole. Who and he even had a reputation for sexual harassment. So in that respect, it didn't come across as that shocking. And then the ones where it is a little surprising, those seem to be the milder cases, right? So like right. Al Franken and John Lasseter seem to be much more on the, you know, Michael Scott, you know, awkward, annoying boss end of the continuum than on the Harvey Weinstein serial rapist end of the continuum.
Yeah, you know, the other thing that's been interesting, and this is the last thing I'm going to say on this, is, you know, kind of, you know, the relitigation of Clarence Thomas to a lesser degree, and also Bill Clinton, that's been coming up. I find it really interesting because on the one hand with Clinton, you know, the defense is, well, you know, Paul, like Starr went in there and he uncovered every stone and every rock. And if, you know, and if the rape allegations against Clinton had been real, then he would have found it out. I get that. But part of me is like, well, you know, the climate back then, I don't know if that's so. And then also the fact that Clarence Thomas got confirmed to the Supreme Court, you know, you'd see, I mean, looking at his CV, you would have been like, we just need any excuse to not confirm this guy. And I don't know. I don't know.
Well, so the Clinton thing is interesting to me, right? So, The way I think is the most interesting way to look at it is imagine the counterfactual where his wife won the presidency a year ago. Would we be having this kind of cultural moment, or if we were, would it be extending to him? And another way to put this, right, is that I think one reason why he is being caught up in this is, you know, not only objectively because he did skeezy things, right? And, you know, you can argue about which ones you believe and all that sort of things. I, you know, Vox has written up that they think that, like, the Juanita Broderick allegations are plausible and that they, and actually when you hear some of the details of, like, the Weinstein allegations, they follow a similar MO. Mm-hmm. But aside from that, even if you put the Broderick allegations aside, you know, the other things he did, he definitely was a serial sexual harasser in the workplace for decades. So, you know, would he be caught up in this if Hillary was president? And I think probably not, right? I think that obviously the Republicans would you know, make that accusation, but I don't think the Democrats would be receptive to it in the way that they are.
Trump brought the Clinton accusers to one of the debates, right? And it didn't really take.
That's right.
I mean, maybe it motivated his base a little bit more.
That's right.
But it was not. It did not explode into a big campaign issue.
Yeah, that's a good point, right? And but I don't know. I don't know if you'd be seeing a fair number of you know, Democrats and left-wing journalists and people like that saying like, whoa, it is time to reevaluate Clinton's legacy. Maybe he was right after all. I mean, maybe his accusers were right after all.
Well, how much of this is not that Clinton isn't president, but that Trump is, right? I mean, you know, there were, there are accusations leveled against him, right? And, you know, and in the absence of being able to get him to actually address those at this moment, you know, it's like we rewind, right? And we're like, wait a minute.
So like, the counterfactual here is that in the absence of Trump, let's say that there's some alternate universe where Rubio was nominated and won, or, you know, and then, yeah, so let's say, you know, we're in the Mitt Romney's second term right now. And the thing about Weinstein still came out. Are you saying that it wouldn't have spread to, you know, be like a broader cultural moment? Obviously, anybody learning the facts of Weinstein is going to be horrified no matter what's happening politically.
But no, I'm saying, for sure.
Would it have become a big deal if we hadn't have had the women's march and all that sort of business? And the,
yeah,
and the
well, that's what I'm saying. I'm saying like the women's march, I think, unleashed something, right? It unleashed something. And while, you know, we haven't seen like the same kind of like extremely visible visible movement, right? At least not in those same kinds of numbers. I think things have been brewing. And I think the Weinstein thing coming out, it's like, boom, you know, we got the movement ready to move on something, right? You know, here we go. You know,
a key issue, I think, is also the motivation or the what makes the victims feel like they can come forward now, or that it's that they can take that risk and subject themselves to that. And I think there could be, as far as Gabriel's hypothesis, I think there could be there's some cataclysmic kind of end of world type thinking that is associated with Trump being president, which may be making more people say, fuck it, I'm going to tell this story.
Oh God.
Yes. I don't know. I mean, if we're all going to be blown up, you know, I want this thing to come out first.
Yeah, I think that's a great point.
For more, visit us on the web, theannexpodcast.com.